Welcome to Caffeinated Thoughts Radio, a stimulating look at culture, current events, faith, and politics from a Christian and conservative point of view. We don't just talk on the radio, we blog too. Check us out at caffeinatedthoughts.com. Now grab a cup of coffee and join us. This is Caffeinated Thoughts Radio.
And welcome back to Caffeinated Thoughts Radio. Caffeinated Thoughts Radio is brought to you by Myers & Associates, serving the Midwest with industrial maintenance products and services. Call them at 515-795-3676. Myers & Associates, keeping your operations running. Welcome back to another week of Caffeinated Thoughts Radio. This is Shane Vanderhard. Of course, I got Ron at the board who makes the magic happen.
Yes, indeed.
Yes, because we cannot do this without Ron. We always need more Ron.
More Ron.
In our radio show. Then now sitting across from me is not Brian. Looks much better than Brian.
Oh, yes.
Much better looking than Brian.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
Jennifer Bowen, who's with Iowa Right to Life, but now, and we're going to talk about this a little bit later, Life Right Action. She is not only going to, we're going to talk about her organization, new organization this segment, but she is going to be the guest co-host for the entire show, so she'll be with us the entire hour. I have to admit something to our listeners who may not be surprised by this. I am a moron.
No, I'm moron.
You're moron. Yeah. Last week, when we were talking about the Iowa football game, I said, oh, they're playing Kennison State. I was looking at my ESPN app. Mm. Then after, and of course, this was on Friday because we record on Fridays, I started getting notifications Friday night. It's like, Kennison State. Oh, that was the basketball, schedule. Because we were talking about Kennison State. Why is Iowa playing Kennison State, for football in November? Because generally teams like, that caliber, they would play early in the year. Of course, I alluded to, next week they'll have Michigan. Well, obviously last Saturday they had Michigan and they won.
Yep.
I did check. They are playing Illinois this Saturday. I do have that right. So the question will be: Will they be the team that played on November 5th that shows up to play Illinois, or will it be the team that beat Michigan on November 12th? I hope it's the November 12th team that shows up to play Illinois.
They did a good job.
Yeah, and they're bowl eligible now, being 6-4. Hopefully, they'll become 7-4. Also, too, I don't know if anybody else has experienced this, but I just found out that I am stuck in a internet monopoly. I was looking at actually changing because I just get so tired of Mediacom. I currently have Mediacom high-speed internet. And I wanted to switch to CenturyLink. And their website said, hey, Shane, yes, we have service in Pleasant Hill. And then I call them up. It's like, oh, no, we don't have enough dedicated lines, so we can't, add you as a customer. I'm like, what kind of a business model is this? So anyway, I'm just pairing things back. So I called back Mediacom because, first of all, I wanted to make sure they dropped our phone. I called them about a month and a half ago asking them to drop our phone coverage, and they hadn't yet. And going through talking with this lady that was walking me through this, it's like, well, we can bundle and we could save you some money. It's like, we could do phone and cable TV. And I already explained to her, I was like, we looked at doing cable TV. However, because we have a finished basement, I'm not spending the $1,000 or so it takes to rewire my home to have internet upstairs, because the actual main connection comes in through the unfinished part of our basement. But I'd want it in our living room, which is clear on the other side of the house. So you'd actually have I actually talked to an electrician about what it would cost to get this done. It's probably about $1,000. We're going to have to cut a couple of holes in your ceiling in order to thread the wire through. I'm like, no, thank you.
Yeah.
That's not possible. We dropped that idea. And then I tried telling her, it's like, I need to drop the phone. It's like, well, you don't want the phone? No, I don't want the phone. Are you sure you don't want the phone? It's like, everybody in my family.
Everybody else likes phones?
Phones are good. And I tried to say, you don't understand. Everybody in my house has a cell phone. We don't need a landline anymore. And she's like, well, what if your cell phone dies? Who doesn't have a charger in their home? I mean, even if I have to leave it plugged in, that's no different than having a landline. I just have to go to the phone rather than carrying it around with me. So anyway, finally, I think we've got finally everything dropped except just internet, which I got to pay $1 gazillion a month for. And I'm stuck. And it's, you know, somebody was saying, you know, that's all first world problems. But yes, it is. I admit. But due to my business, I have to have high speed internet. Some kind of it's not really a luxury for me. Anyway, what's going on with you, Jennifer?
I'm enjoying listening to you. That's exactly right. That's not just me.
Yeah. Okay. So you're making a change.
Yes.
You are no longer the CEO of Iowa Right to Life. You're still a spokesperson for them, but you started this new organization called Life Right Action. What precipitated that? You know, what's going on with that?
Great question. So actually where it started is not even really a germ of an idea, but about a year ago, I became aware that the abortion industry in Iowa and its supporters had targeted a few seats in the House and in the Senate. Mm-hmm. Good incumbents like Majority Leader Chris Hagenow and some others.
He's in a tough district.
He's in a tough district where every single vote matters. And so there were a few that the Des Moines Register ran a piece on that they had targeted. And so that was a little bit concerning. And then as we got closer to this crazy turbulent election cycle, I began to realize that there were quite a few seats that had been targeted by the Iowa abortion industry. Mm-hmm. Two and a half dozen or so seats that had been targeted. And so that really just began to weigh on me as, you know, Iowa Right to Life, it does a great job in a number of things. And we're obviously very involved in the political realm. We're very involved in the, you know, the grassroots and educational outreach and all of that.
Right.
And it became very imperative to me that I do as much as I could in these particular races. And so out of that bore this idea of Life Right Action, which is a political advocacy group. And I founded it in early September, actually.
Okay.
And just got to work right away. There were some ideas that I had. What I wanted to do was just help in any capacity that I could.
So is this organized as a PAC or is this a C4?
Thankfully, my attorneys with Whitaker, Hagenow, and Gustav
talked to me. They do a lot of that kind of work.
They do, and they are. They didn't even ask for that plug. But if you are a conservative nonprofit or a conservative political group or conservative in whatever capacity, they are phenomenal, and you want them to have your back. They talked me out of a PAC. And into a political advocacy group, which really there wasn't too much of a difference, except my understanding of it, a lot less paperwork to do it the way that I'm doing it.
Okay. I never even realized that was when you said political advocacy group, I just thought that was your description. I didn't realize that was a tax class or a classification.
Yes, it's the classification of a C4,
okay.
Classification. And so I know everybody's like, what? You just put me to sleep.
Yeah.
Which is the exact opposite of caffeinated radio. And so I just got to work. We also had, I didn't mention, we had now former Senator Majority Leader Mike Gronstall. And really this isn't the mission statement, but the heart behind it was, I want to know that I did everything that I could the day after the election. For Iowa races. It was that important to me because of the life issue, mm-hmm. because of the target on the back that so many of our good incumbents and even new races had. And so I got to work talking to so many people because what I realized was if I stayed in Iowa Right to Life in the capacity that I was as CEO, which I love, loved every, you know, almost every second of it. And even in the adversity, you grow to love that as well.
Sure.
You know, when you learn things about yourself that others are saying, et cetera. And so I didn't want to transition out of there, but I began to realize that it was more dangerous for me to stay in somewhere where I was comfortable than to go into the unknown,
right,
where God was calling me. And so I resigned my position at IRA to Life to start this group. And in short order, IRA to Life said, you know, we are so, and they have been incredibly supportive. They've come on as the first financial backer, okay, of Life Right Action. And I've just been so blessed by the board there and our supporters. And they said, you know, how can we support your group, but how, you know, is there a path that we can work together? And so that's how I'm doing dual roles now, remaining as the spokeswoman, mm-hmm, and a consultant for IRA to Life. And with Life Right Action, it's really exciting because even though we were not able to accomplish what I had hoped we would accomplish, which was, you know, ousting the Supreme Court justices.
Right.
You know, we saw Mike Gronstall removed. We, yeah, saw, and this is not, let me back up and say, this is not because of Life Right Action.
Oh, it's
at all.
Everybody helped.
They, you know, Majority Leader Chris Hagenow and his supporters, they worked their guts out
right,
to get the win that they got. But I knew that even beyond this election, there would always be another election.
Right.
There would always be a need.
We're going to turn around and have more.
We were talking
two more years. Yeah,
2020. You know, the election results weren't even in, and the pundits are talking about 2020.
Shut your mouth. Well, my focus is on, you know, 2018 and
2018,
race.
and that's really where the focus of Life Right Action is as well too, because I knew there was the governor's race that was coming up. There's one individual. There's several names that have been, you know, pushed on the conservative side. One side on the liberal side of things in Iowa, Senator Liz Matthes is considering a run for governor.
Mm-hmm.
That would be a terrible, terrible thing to happen.
Right.
So
I'm trying
there'll
to
always
think,
be a need for a group like this.
Right now, they're lacking kind of depth, the Democrats. Because other than Liz Matthes, I don't know who else would run. I know their
they
current
really
DNC
the current
Andy, can't think of her name. The current chair.
Oh, Dr. Andy McGuire.
Thank you. I know she's considering it, even though
I think that
I don't
there's
see
a push
after,
to see the old ousted and
right,
the new. They really
well, and I don't see how you go from
in
losing. You know, election
so
as badly as the Iowa Democrats did to, you know, thinking that's a, some sort of a mandate to run for governor.
No.
So I would think that maybe she's been shocked back into reality. So definitely Liz Matthes on Republican side, provided it's not a given that Governor Branstad won't run again, even though I personally don't think he will. So we're looking at what, Kim Reynolds, Bill Northey. I've heard Ron Corbett. Have you heard any other names?
I haven't heard any other names right now.
Okay.
I've heard speculation about other names, but, you know, it's still far enough out.
Right.
That those are the three that I've heard as well, too.
I think people are kind of waiting. Let's see what Governor Branstad actually decides to do before, you know, we actually
right,
put any feelers out there.
I do, as a side note to that question, it was interesting. There's been quite a bit of speculation that he would step down early,
uh-huh,
and allow her, and certainly I'm not speaking like I know anything about the inner workings there.
Right.
But I did have the thought last week that, you know, even if that was in his mind, he's got to really be looking forward to the next 2 years. Because as he said last year when he was installed as what, the longest serving governor in U.S. history,
mm-hmm,
he'd only had a legislature, I think, 2 years,
right,
where he had both chambers. So he's got to be pretty excited. I know he is. I saw him on election night. Because there's just been such a bottleneck on
right,
so many issues.
I know he's also going to have – he's going to have to deal with some bills probably that he'd rather not deal with, too.
On a number of issues, I think that the mandate is there.
Yeah.
And I think that it'll be very interesting to see – how that all plays out.
And as I mentioned, Brian and I mentioned last week, one of the more exciting things, developments from from election day was us, you know, turning the Senate, ousting six incumbents. And then Mike Gronstall, that was like the cherry on top.
Nothing else. When I heard Senator Gronstall, you'll find this actually hard to believe. But when I heard that Bleeding Heartland, the blog that isn't mm-hmm. conservative,
yeah.
putting it mildly, she was admitting even before the race had been called that it didn't look like Senator Gronstall was going to win.
That district's been trending.
When I heard
Republican
that news,
mm-hmm.
I could not speak for at least 25, 30 seconds. My mouth was open. I could not take a breath in. I could not believe that we lived in a world where that impediment was removed because, in part because I've spent so much time over there, fighting to keep Libor Carhart, the late term abortionist, out of,
right.
of there. And it has been trending away from Gronstall for a number of years for a few reasons, not the least of which that late term abortion fight there. And so I was quite speechless for a number of seconds, and the people around me actually thought it was pretty funny. It probably was the most enjoyable 30 seconds of the night, but it was so stunning. And as I was talking to one senator later that night, it wasn't just that it was a close race. He lost by well over 2,000 votes.
Yeah.
In a district like that, that's a lot. That's a clarion call that you are no longer part of who we want representing us. And so I was able to spend several minutes that evening rejoicing with Senator Ernst, because that's actually where she and I met, uh-huh. is over in that fight, asking for Senator Gronstall to let the Senate vote. And now the Senate gets to vote. The Senate gets to vote on a whole lot of things.
Yes, it'll be fun. And I got my laundry list of, or wish list, I guess I should say, up at caffeinatedthoughts.com. Be sure to check that out. Hang tight. We'll be back in a moment. This is Caffeinated Thoughts Radio.
Hi, this is Brian Myers of Myers & Associates. If you're involved in maintenance at a manufacturing plant, you know how costly it can be when a machine goes down. And if the reason that machine went down is because the electronic controls on it failed, it can really be problematic if those electronics are obsolete. Well, not to worry. We represent Providence Industrial Electronics Repair, and they can get your machine up and running in no time. They repair boards, drives, servo motors, light curtains, you name it. So if you need industrial electronics repaired at your plant, or if you have other industrial maintenance needs, give me a call at 515-490-2640. That's Myers & Associates, 515-490-2640. Myers & Associates, keeping your operations running.
Welcome back to Caffeinated Thoughts Radio. Caffeinated Thoughts Radio is brought to you in part by Travis Riswold of Modern Woodmen of America. Call Travis at 515-883-0029, and he can help you find a life insurance you need. So, Trump is moving along with his transition, and the media has, I think, gone completely unhinged. Poor, poor, poor mainstream media.
We can't tell what he's doing.
We can't watch him eat steak. I saw.
I'm not going to make him suffer. Give him indigestion.
I saw that NBC story, I think I've got it pulled up here. As Trump leaves press behind for steak dinner, incoming admin already showing lack of transparency. Because they didn't have the protective press detail going with him to this family steak dinner. For one thing, they haven't set up the protocols for that. Eventually, press will travel with him. They've already mentioned that, we traveled in separate planes when he was in campaigning. And I don't know if I've actually been on Trump's plane back before. I don't think they would allow me on anymore.
A couple years ago, wasn't it?
Yeah, 2015.
Seems like a couple years ago.
He did a press conference on his plane.
I remember that.
And we were all thinking, why are you doing this on your plane? Because it was crowded.
Because he wanted to show you his plane.
Well, yeah, and his plane was cool.
If you had a plane, you'd probably do your press conference there too.
I'm sure I would.
At least once.
Probably. Then I'd say, hey, go take a look around.
Make sure that everybody from elementary school saw it.
Yeah. So I did the tour and shook his hand, and I don't think he had formally announced. He was still just kind of considering it. But he did the press. I don't think most press, if they have not been on his plane, don't realize, while it is big compared to a lot of private jets, it's not the size of Air Force One. There's not room to have press on, and that's the plane he flew around campaigning. I'm sorry, little snowflakes. You can't fly with him. When he gets access to Air Force One, then there's press space. Then there will be traveling press. So things will change up as he becomes president. This is just ridiculous. So even if he was president, so what that you couldn't watch him eat steak? I suppose you want to be there in case he chokes. they want to catch down on video. Here's go. And Eric Trump moves in with the Heimlich maneuver.
Somebody in the room will capture it.
Yeah. With everybody with iPhone. But we don't get to break the news. Somebody on Twitter gets to break the news. So, oh, well. Deal. Presidents need privacy, too. They shouldn't have to have press following around when they're doing a family event, my opinion. Regardless of who the president is, what party they belong to, that doesn't matter to me. It's a hard enough job as it is. They should be able to have some semblance of a normal life and some privacy. So little snowflakes are complaining.
I think they feel themselves heading pell-mell into irrelevance. If he's accomplished anything, it's that he's helped cull out the real media and who's making, who's pushing agendas.
Right.
And he's really pulled back the curtain on that. So I think they're just in that panic mode too.
The fact is everybody's pushing the agenda. I push an agenda. The difference between me and a mainstream media is I'm transparent about it.
You're transparent and you're a blog. You're not, and
well,
that's not,
I consider,
that's not
we
a
do
bad
some
thing.
New, we do news
right,
too.
No,
yeah.
Absolutely do. But when you're ABC, NBC, CBS, CNN, and you can't see any light between one side and the other. Like, you should be able to, journalism should be neutral. I interviewed with a wonderful reporter yesterday from the Associated Press. We ended up talking for quite a while, surprisingly enough. And you never know where she is on any given issue.
Right.
Or this issue or the life issue, whatever. But that's how journalism should be. If you're representing an organization that's saying we're going to just neutrally give you the news.
Yes,
she's so rare anymore in the mainstream media.
Your line of questions shouldn't be, you shouldn't get your questions from when you're interviewing a pro-life person from the, pro-abortion.
Right.
Lobby.
Or your hackles are up when I say something. Like, we're having a conversation between two people. I would have no idea where she is
right
on the issue, and that I love that because that's how journalism started. That's how it should be.
And a lot of times, even within news articles, they're kind of that way still. But the problem is now the bias is more what they don't cover,
and
what gets coverage. So, that's something that needs to be, discussed as well. You also don't make up stories. I think because there's that desire to want to break news, there's a tendency now to move forward with a story with very little source information. Like, I think it was ABC News that said, the Trump kid, Donald Trump is applying for security clearances for his kids, which ended up being false. I was happy to see the White House say, no, that's not true. He hasn't asked for security clearances for his kids.
It's like, how do you make stuff up and still have a job?
Right. So I'm sure
I wouldn't even in my role. Well, if I made stuff up, I should not have a job.
It may not necessarily have been made up. It could have just somebody speculated down the line saying, oh, a source said. The problem with sources that are unwilling to go on record is that sometimes they're wrong, you know? That's why,
or imaginary.
Yeah, well, yeah, I'm giving them the benefit of the doubt. Sometimes, yeah, so among anonymous sources nice could be imaginary too. I've called out, say, Jonathan Martin when he was with Politico. I remember he made back. Oh gosh, because this is one of the things that Sarah Palin actually tweeted out of something I wrote, because he published something with anonymous sources from the King campaign and Grassley campaign complaining about Sarah Palin. Well, I actually talked to the Grassley campaign and the King campaign. They're like, no. So I basically, the headline was Jonathan Martin's full of crap, which of course Sarah Palin loved. Anyway,
she does like that clickbait.
She does. She does.
Anyway, she speaks in clickbait.
Well, at the time, that was even before the clickbait thing. I didn't mean it for clickbait. That's something I sincerely believed. And still believe about Jonathan Martin. So he's not my favorite journalist, to say that. Also, the media's been complaining about the pace of the transition. Oh, it's going so slow. David Axelrod actually said, you know what? There's a lot of things you can blame. There are a lot of concerns about the Trump transition. The pace is not one of them. He said they're on the same pace that we were with Barack Obama in 2008. So it's like, I think this,
we're in such an instant society that it's like,
right.
You have thousands of positions. I mean, obviously not thousands of cabinet positions, but eventually you have thousands of positions to fill.
Yeah.
How do you get that done in a 24-hour news cycle? Like,
you just can't. It's going to take time.
They're just so desperate for some kind of a story and some relevance that they'll just make everything dramatic.
Yeah.
And at some point,
and they're working. They don't necessarily
don't want the dramatics.
And they did. Part of it too is they did shift gears. You had Chris Christie, who mm-hmm. was working as a transition chair for, you know, while the election was going on, and the transition was largely ignored because they weren't sure they were going to win. Then mm-hmm. suddenly they won, and it's like, oh, well, I'd still like to be a fly on the wall to know exactly what transpired. There's people who are thinking, for instance, Jared Kushner, and you're like, who's Jared Kushner? Well, Jared Kushner's Ivanka Trump's husband.
There's a tie between Kushner and Governor Christie back,
yeah.
You know, yeah, in 2011, prosecuted his father?
Prosecuted his father on 18 counts of illegal campaign contributions, tax evasion, and witness tampering, and his dad, I think, Kushner's dad served like 2 years in prison. So there was a little bad blood between.
Perhaps.
So that could have been part of it. I think
or
some of the.
Be, maybe
some
it was of the, planned. Maybe
it could have been planned.
I mean, it's not like he pulled somebody out of the sky that didn't belong in that position and pushed Christie out.
Yeah.
It makes sense to have a vice president.
Right.
Elect.
I think Christie's problems in New Jersey is also probably a contributing factor.
Right.
Too.
And I don't think Governor Christie is gone from the Trump team. Like,
he's been demoted.
Whole,
yeah.
He's been demoted, but I don't think we've seen the last of Governor Christie in a Trump administration, would be my guess.
Yeah, we'll see. I'm not entirely sure. But I think some of the changes that actually have been good. I like the fact that Governor Pence, Vice President-elect Pence, it's going to take a little time to get used to, has basically eliminated all lobbyists from the transition team. That was
and
good.
That was the point, it looks like, of removing Governor Christie, was because of his political background. It was harder for him to be able to make that separation, perhaps,
yeah.
than Governor Pence, who has a history of doing that in Indiana.
Yeah.
Now, and I mean, it's Donald Trump keeping that promise that he doesn't want lobbyists around.
Yeah. Now, the 5-year ban, I think it's positive. It's praiseworthy. I'm not sure how enforceable
it
is.
How it's going to happen. Right?
Because for one thing, if you're only one term president unless it's passed into law.
What do you do in that fifth year?
Right. Yeah. Right. Now, if he happens to be a two-term president and somebody quits after term one, then he can block him from lobbying while he's – and this would just be executive branch lobbying. Obviously, they can't control what people do in legislature or Congress. Congress has to come up with those rules and pass a law. So the short list for the cabinet's interesting. Again, this is Friday we're recording, and it was just announced that Senator Jeff Sessions will be the when confirmed will be our next Attorney General. I think some liberal minds are probably exploding right now, but I think Senator Sessions is very qualified, being a former U.S. prosecutor and Attorney General of Alabama. You can't really get much better experience than that before stepping into an Attorney General role. So that was a good choice on Trump's part. Also for the CIA director, you got Congressman Mike Pompeo of Kansas. He's on the House Intelligence Committee. He was a Army officer as well. I don't think he's necessarily your obvious choice for that role. So, you know, he might be good. I don't know. I'm not going to pass judgment. I certainly think there are worse people he could have picked. There are probably some better people he could have picked, but, you know, it is what it is. So I don't really have an opinion on that. Lieutenant General Mike Flynn, retired Lieutenant General Mike Flynn, is going to be his national security advisor. That's who I thought would be a natural CIA director, since he actually was the head of the Defense Intelligence Agency under President Obama, I think, for a while, or maybe it was George W. Bush. I know he did serve during Obama's administration as well. But, you know, NSA makes sense too, since he's pretty much been his national security advisor throughout the campaign for that continuity. But, you know, there's been some interesting names, you know, with Defense Secretary, for instance, Kelly Ayotte? I can't remember. Ayotte. I was totally wrong. Her name's been floated, and I'm thinking, why? For Defense Secretary. That doesn't make any sense to me.
I don't know enough of her background. I mean, yeah. I know a little bit about her up there.
Well, she's a lawyer, and she was Attorney General before she was U.S. Senator. So I'm just like, yeah, Attorney General made more sense than a Defense Secretary. Anyway, it's kind of interesting. Politico's got an article up. They're kind of – I don't know when the last time was updated, but they're kind of putting up you know, the short names that they're hearing. Secretary of State, for instance, we've got Rudy Giuliani, Bob Corker, Richard Haass, Nikki Haley. I just heard Mitt Romney.
It seems like that one is getting the most play as far as, like, a lot of names in the mix.
Yeah, and more. And, gosh, we're out of time already. Anyway, you can check that out. I just put up an article of Caffeinated Thoughts about the Education Secretary role, so be sure to check that out. This is Caffeinated Thoughts Radio. We'll be back in a moment. Stay tuned.
Hi, this is Brian Myers. When I needed a better life insurance plan, I found it with Travis Risvold of Modern Woodmen of America. When I first met Travis, he wasn't like some other life insurance agents that can be pushy and try to get you to buy something. Travis just made himself available to me. That was it. He told me to let him know if and when I needed anything, and he stayed in touch. When the day came and I did need to make some changes with my life insurance, Travis met with me and walked me through several options so I could make an informed decision. Ultimately, it was the best decision for my situation. So if you need a better or the best life insurance plan for you, call my friend Travis Risvold with Modern Woodmen. His number is 515-883-0029. Travis Risvold with Modern Woodmen. He can help you find the life insurance you need. Call him at 515-883-0029.
Welcome to Caffeinated Thoughts Radio, a stimulating look at culture, current events, faith, and politics from a Christian and conservative point of view. We don't just talk on the radio, we blog too. Check us out at caffeinatedthoughts.com. Now grab a cup of coffee and join us. This is Caffeinated Thoughts Radio.
And welcome back to Caffeinated Thoughts Radio. Caffeinated Thoughts Radio is brought to you in part by Crosswalk Ministries with Scott Owen, who offers biblical counseling and conciliation. Give him a call at 515-292-7141 or go to crosswalkcounseling.org. Speaking of precious little snowflakes, and not the media this time, the protesters, and in particular college students who, my kids are millennials, and they're like shaking their head. It's like, what is wrong with our generation? But you have these protesters, and I want to specifically drill down on what's going on college campuses, but these protesters, I think, are going to do more to, or have done more to unite the Republican Party than Trump ever has, because everybody's like, this is absolutely ridiculous. I mean, what are you protesting for? What do you think you're going to accomplish?
It's so embarrassing.
It's like you're protesting a fair election.
But they don't understand that.
Right.
Because they haven't been taught that in school. They don't understand the process.
Right,
they don't know what the Electoral College is. They don't understand what a fair election is.
And also, what is your end goal? It's not like he's going to resign. Are you going to throw a coup? What are you going to do?
They play with Play-Doh. Like, they can't stage a coup.
Well, that's true. And these college students,
not smart enough not to walk out into oncoming traffic.
Right, that's true. These students, are begging, this is from LifeSite News, they're begging instructors to postpone tests because the stressful path of the election has made the majority of the student body emotionally distraught and distracted. I'm fairly confident it'll be nearly impossible for anyone to focus, one student pleaded. He asked that exams be postponed to preserve the sanctity and mental health of students. And professors,
I think we're past that point.
And professors are doing it.
Professors are doing it. They're also inciting it.
Right. So, for instance, a professor at Yale, an economics professor at Yale, made his exam optional. I've heard of this happening several spots. Wall Street Journal reports dozens of students at Cornell University gathered on a major campus thoroughfare for a cry-in. A cry-in!
Oh, my goodness.
A cry-in!
It's very productive.
You remember when all these conservatives rioted and protested when Barack Obama was elected? Oh yeah,
I remember crying.
Me neither.
I don't remember.
I don't remember that because it didn't happen.
I think my tears were in private. Yeah. But there were tears.
Yeah, well, I was obviously disappointed.
Right. I mean, I didn't know that back in 1991 or whenever I went into college and President Clinton became. I didn't realize I could do all this. I mean, this would have been awesome had I known.
Right.
Well, I'd been in the classroom a lot less.
Yeah, and here even in Des Moines, you had the students walk out of class. And okay, this is an issue.
They're
This wasn't in our production notes, but I got to comment on this because I commented on caffeinatethoughts.com. Check that out too. All right, Tinker v. Des Moines is something that's been brought up. It's a Supreme Court case from 1968. It was basically, if you're not familiar, it was a case where there were a family of students that actually wanted to come into school wearing a black armband to protest the Vietnam War. And Des Moines Public Schools tried to stop that. And Des Moines lost, saying the famous quote from that was that a student's constitutional right as well as teacher's constitutional right are not shed at the schoolhouse gate, which I totally agree with. But they even specified, they mentioned criteria. For instance, it's not disruptive to, the academic process. It's not hurting. It's not infringing on other people's rights. Okay. So fast forward to 2016. Last fall, East told a student that he had to remove a Confederate flag from his car in the parking lot, not even in the school building, or he was going to have his car towed. Why? Because they said, well, it's disruptive to the educational process. They cited Tinker. But students walking out of class protesting somehow is not disruptive to the educational process. I find that fascinating.
you'll find this fascinating too. And it's becoming public information now, so I'll share it. Iowa Right to Life's COO, new COO, his daughter, they're in southern Iowa, and she is potentially about to be suspended from school because after days of teachers in her eighth grade classroom attempting to incite the kids to walk, doing the walkouts like Des Moines is doing, she recorded it, a 45-minute rant of one of the teachers because she got so sick of the listening to these teachers trying to, well, Des Moines, I'm not saying that you have to do it or that you should do it, but you could do it if you want. These teachers in rural Iowa are going to, they're inciting. And so this eighth grader is looking at a suspension because she used her cell phone during school, which is against the rules, because she finally got so sick as an eighth grader of the teachers trying to incite them into doing the walkouts like Des Moines is doing. So you assume if it's happening in one school in southern Iowa, as it is,
yeah,
it's happening all over. The teachers have obviously been being told by whoever at the, you know, at the top to do this. And so these students appear to be savvy enough and smart enough to like, no, I want to stay in the, I don't want to go outside and do what they're doing.
Right.
And so the teachers are trying even harder. And so it begs the question, is that really what's happening? You know, it's not like some student necessarily is walking into a Des Moines classroom and saying, you know, I feel really strongly about this.
Right.
Maybe that's happening in some cases, but I think it's just as possible that the teachers are,
well,
are inciting that, and this will the recording is, parents are planning to go to the school board about it in the next week in this southern town because they're furious.
Like, that sounds like
they're furious.
That sounds like a caffeinated thought story that needs.
That's
to happen,
why I brought it up.
Okay.
Because I can put you in touch with the Iowa Right to Life COO.
That'd be great. That'd be great. So look for that. Suck it up, Buttercup Bill. God bless Representative Bobby Kaufman.
This was a fun one to read.
Yeah. He has a message for any state university that spends taxpayer dollars on grief counseling for students upset at the outcome of last week's presidential election. Suck it up, Buttercup. I've seen four or five schools in other states that are establishing cry zones where they're staffed by state grief counselors. Kids can come cry out their sensitivity to the election results. Bobby Kaufman said, he said, I find the whole hysteria to be incredibly annoying. People have the right to be hysterical on their own time and their own dime. So
what I love, I mean, there's so many things about the Suck It Up Buttercup Bill that, I mean, Build Me Up Buttercup was one of my favorite songs. So you throw the word buttercup in and I love it.
Yeah.
Anytime you can say buttercup, I mean, that's fun.
But
with what's so, one of the fun things about this bill is that Bobby Kaufman, Representative Kaufman, isn't some old white guy telling you what to do with your body, you know, to these millennials. He's in that age bracket. He's a young man
that
himself.
Young? Okay.
He's a young man himself. He's not in college anymore, obviously, but I don't know the cutoff, but I think
yet?
Just over 30,
if I
remember.
I don't think he's technically millennial.
But he's not some old white guy.
But he's not like old they head. Would,
he, right. Right. Because
like me.
Absolutely.
Or yeah. Like Brian.
Yeah.
Exactly. And so I think that's what's fun is when people, when voices of that generation or close to that generation, depending on what you're looking at, are calling it out. I love that.
Yeah. I just want to make one more note. Barbara Boxer introduced the long shot bill to scrap electoral college system. I'd recommend that she focuses her attention on getting rid of superdelegates and in her own party first, because I find it very hypocritical, and you're okay with superdelegates, but yet you want to get rid of the Electoral College.
I think they're spinning so much that what they're doing is, why waste your time on, it's not even a long shot, it's such a waste of time.
Right. Because you think
you don't have any majority anywhere.
You think the flyover states are going to say, oh yeah, that's a good idea.
I just saw all that red on the map. Let's move that way.
Yeah. We'll be back. Stay tuned.
You're pretty sure you know why he treated you that way, or do you? I'm Scott Owen with Crosswalk Ministries of Central Iowa, and it's time to pause for peace. Assuming the motives and interests of others is a great way to fan the flames in a conflict. Such bias tends to impact our words, attitudes, and actions. But what if you spent more time and energy really trying to understand the potential interests this person has? Try giving him the benefit of the doubt and look for wholesome or at least neutral motives. Seeking to understand another person allows you to approach him with a spirit of gentleness that God commands in Galatians 6:1. You who are spiritual should restore him in a spirit of gentleness. The next time you are in a conflict, employ the peacemaker pause principle. The letter U is for understand the other party's interests. If you are confused about another person's motives, call 515-635-5465 to set up a free consultation or visit our website at crosswalkcounseling.org. Again, that number is 515-635-5465.
Hey, do you want to take advantage of the marketing potential within social media for your company or organization, but you're not so sure how? Let me help. My company, 415 Communications, is a social media consulting firm that works with groups like yours. Go to 415communications.com or give me a call at 515-321-5077. And now we come to my favorite part of the show. We're about to share a story that is truly unbelievable, yet you know it must be true because
you can't make this stuff up.
This is from Metro UK. People dying while taking selfies has become such a common phenomenon that researchers are now working on how to stop it. Yes, humanity's pursuit of the perfect clifftop duck face has really got that bad. The first 8 months of 2016, there were already 73 deaths confirmed linked to selfies. That's already much more than the 39 deaths in the whole of 2015 and 15 in 2014. Selfie deaths are increasing at an alarming rate, and it seems that common sense is not going to be enough to stop this. PhD student, I'm not even going to try to pronounce, Hemak Lamba, is working with on an app to try and warn people where they're in danger, along with a team at Carnegie Mellon University in Pittsburgh. Technology Review reports this. If you were thinking, is this really a real story? This is Metro UK is actually reporting on the report that MIT Technology Review reported on. So, yes, this is actual thing. Hemak looked into the circumstances of all 127 confirmed times people died while trying to take a selfie. Of those recorded instances, 76 were in India, 9 in Pakistan, 8 in the United States, and 6 in Russia. And he found the most likely way people died doing this was falling from a great height. As people tried to pose for an impressive photo on a cliff edge or on top of a tall building. Others involved water or a combination of heights and water, such as jumping into the sea. However, the causes of death varied in different countries.
No.
Selfie deaths in Russia and America were more likely to be related to weapons, with people posing holding guns, for example. Okay.
No.
Just a note. If you are going to pose with a weapon, make sure it is unloaded and the chamber is clear.
Yes. No bullets.
Oh, my word.
Anyway, in India, where more than half of the deaths occurred, these Indians apparently can't get the selfie thing down. It is common to pose next to rail tracks.
Ah, yes.
As it is seen as a sign of long-lasting relationship, but in fact can lead to getting hit by a train.
How can you get, if you're next to the rail tracks, how can you get hit by a train if you're next to the rail tracks?
Apparently they're really, really close. Like,
really close.
We're going to post their head on the rail.
How terrible.
Oh. He's trying to develop a kind of selfie warning system as an app, including data on where people have injured themselves trying to take a photo. Okay.
I can save them a lot of money.
Right.
And no app needs to be developed. We were given a God-given app inside of our head.
Called common sense?
Exactly.
And self-preservation?
It costs nothing.
You know what, though? I think that's short-circuited with some people.
I don't get it.
I don't understand it
either. I don't understand. I don't need a picture of myself badly enough.
In the actual article, and the, I encourage you to look
at, or of anybody.
They actually have pictures of people, not people dying, but people taking selfies, like, I mean, seriously, on top of like this pillar where, you know, you look down, it's like, man, if you fall from that, you're dead. Another guy was taking a selfie while base jumping. First of all, I think base jumping is utterly stupid anyway. But, you know, to focus on taking a selfie while doing that. Anyway, people, yeah, use common sense.
It's not pro-life to be taking selfies of 127 families.
Don't prove Darwinism right.
No. Use the app inside your head.
Yes. This is Caffeinated Thoughts Radio. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next week.